Well, good evening all and everyone. Welcome to this Monroe City Council meeting for January 22nd, 2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask that meeting, if you would take roll call, please, I'd appreciate it.
Councilperson Gary?
Here.
Cutabat?
Here.
Williams?
Here.
Camp?
Present.
Davis?
Present.
Gamble?
Here.
Hanford? And student representative Brana?
Here.
All right. Let the record show that Councilmember Hanford is not here, as he shared last night. Last week he would be out of town. Although I believe he's made it back, he's not feeling well and sent word that he didn't want to get anyone else sick. So he's going to be recuperating at home.
Could you thank him on earth?
Yeah, I will do that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Please join me at this time for the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, first on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This time is set aside for citizens to speak to City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Please ask that you limit your time to 5 minutes, and we'd also appreciate your name and address for the record. We do have another individual signed up this evening, and that's Hannah Lindstrom.
Good evening. Is this on? So, Hannah Lindstrom, 12825 Ingram Road. Good evening. I actually have some handouts for you guys, so if you want to take one, pass it around. I came to talk about the cold weather shelter just to kind of give you guys an update and then also give you guys a big thanks to the city. It's been going really good. We've had a lot of different people involved. So, wait till that gets around. And then, actually, can I ask you guys a question? How much do you guys know about the shelter? Do you want me to give some background, kind of how it's... Okay, awesome. So the first one there is just the flyer that tells about where it's at, times, dates, details. And then the second page, I believe, says cold weather shelter update. Or maybe it's the last one. But kind of the purpose of the shelter... is obviously to provide warmth, safety, health, shelter, and food during times of inclement weather for those who are homeless or underhoused, so that obviously nobody dies. Kind of a little bit of background on the shelter. Neil Watkins from the food bank has been trying to kind of get a cold weather shelter started for the last few years. And this last spring, he came and approached the YMCA about possibly having it at the YMCA. And I work at the YMCA. I'm the team director there. And so I was put on the task of looking into that. I'm also a board member at Take the Next Step, which is a resource center here in Monroe, which does amazing things. So I definitely had an interest in it. So we kind of just got a group of people together that were interested in making it happen and formed the Sky Valley Cold Weather Alliance, their official name. It is just a group of community members. And I'm the chair for that. That's kind of the background. Basically, we worked through the spring and over the summer trying to find a location, just trying to get it all together. And we did. So we opened it officially November 25th, I believe. There's been a ton of different organizations and churches that have been involved in making it possible. And it's been really awesome to see so many organizations step up. The city has been amazing. Brad over there probably doesn't want to hear this, but he is the one that has updated the website. He updates the hotline every day. He makes the official call on whether we open or not. So I just wanted to give a huge thanks to obviously Brad and the city for everything that you guys have done. The police department too has been great. I mean, they've been bringing people as needed. They helped in some of the trainings for some of our volunteers, and so it's just been, again, really cool to see everybody helping out, the fire department as well. The fire station is actually a backup site. If you know, one of the sites, normal sites that we have can't open for some reason, so that's just a huge plus. Some of the other sites, just so you know, it says it on the first page there, but the sites are the Covenant Church, the Rock Church, Cascade Church, and then the YMCA. So those are just kind of the, again, a huge thanks to them as well as being the sites that are opening their doors up. Since we opened, Brad can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've been open 15, 16 days since November. Obviously, this cold weather we're having right now, probably the last like 7 or 8 days we've been open. We have had probably unduplicated like 10 to 12 different people that have used it, but generally there's an average of 5 to 6 people every night that we see that are using it. It's been going really well. We again had a ton of volunteers step up and volunteer, and so the Snohomish County Medical Reserve Corps has been hugely instrumental in doing that. They organize volunteers. They're the ones that call them, you know, make sure that we have people for every shift. So they've played a huge role in this as well. I didn't mention this, but the shelter is staffed by volunteers completely from the community and the Medical Reserve Corps. We run them all actually through the Medical Reserve Corps, so they're insured. Like the county takes care of that, so it's just really, really amazing that they stepped in and helped out. Just the supplies. The city of Monroe again supplied the cots that we use, and then we had a bunch of different churches donate blankets and pillows that we're using, and then the YMCA washes the blankets every time we need that, and then the food bank has provided all of the food, so we have meals for that in the evening and in the morning. So it's just been, again, really awesome to see everybody pitch in and step up. And I'm the staff on duty when it's at the Y, so I've been there a few nights when it's been open, and it's just a really cool, really cool experience to be able to talk to these people, and they're all really grateful, and just to know that we are, you know, doing something that's, there's such a need for it. That's kind of the update. I also give you guys just another two-sided, just what is homelessness, so just a little more. The county's doing a point-in-time count this Thursday, where they go out and they actually count as many people as they can that are homeless in Snohomish County. Last year's count in Snohomish County, there was 2,387 people that they counted. And I believe almost 300 of those were in the kind of Monroe, Salton, this valley right in here. So that's just a lot of people. So there's obviously a huge need for it. And they'll be interesting when we do the count this week to kind of see, you know, is that more, is it less? But that's just for you guys to read on your own. I just wanted to say a huge thanks. And then also, I guess, just ask you, in any of your decisions that you guys make, to just please keep this population in mind, because they're definitely, you know, the people in this area that need it the most, that need your guys' help the most. So I would encourage you to, again, just keep them in mind with any decisions you make. That's it.
Thank you.
That's all that I have who have signed up to speak, but as always, I'd like to open it up at this time to the members of the audience. If there's anyone who would like to address council, you may do so. Please approach the podium, provide the name and address, and please leave it, limit your time to 5 minutes. Okay, well, seeing none, then we'll move on to the first of our business and action items this evening. And tonight we have a review. And I'm going to pull it up here. So of course, my computer doesn't work.
That's true.
That's right. We have an exit audit. Audit exit conference tonight scheduled with council. And so I'll have you come to the podium tonight, and we. How many pages did you miss? Is it just the one?
No, that's all. We'll go through all the documents.
Okay.
My name is Brian Goldrick. I was the auditor in charge of the accountability financial statement audit that we did for 2011. With me is Janie Bentler. She was the audit supervisor for this. You guys will start with the blue covered page. This is the actual financial statement audit report that will be provided. It's a public document. It'll go on our website. Just wanted to go through a couple of the pages. I think you'll jump actually to page number one is what it should be, the independent auditor's report on the internal controls or financial reporting. This is our report over the internal control processes that are in place here at the city over financial reporting, so your financial statement package that you guys present on an annual basis. We issued an unqualified opinion, which means everything looked good. There were no errors, material errors, or anything of that nature that would cause us to issue a qualified or disappointed opinion. If you go down to the bottom, you can see that we did not identify any deficiencies in the internal controls that we consider to be a material weakness. We did note one matter that we presented to you guys in a management letter. If you jump over, that's the third document. That's the very last highlight. That's the last sentence that's highlighted there in that report. And what it's referring to there is the management letter here that we have, which is the third report. You go to the second page. And this management letter is in reference to the financial statement preparation. And the bullet points document the areas, the issues that we noted. So the biggest concern that we found in that just kind of summarized this management letter is the fact is the review process that's in place here at the city. We just want to reiterate the importance of ensuring that there's a proper, adequate review process of the financial statements, because as they're presented to us, we then audit those as being final and complete. And if issues are noted, we then need to bring them to the attention of the city and as well as the council. And the city did make all of the changes that we found. So the financial statements as a whole address these issues that we noted. But because this is something that we've discussed in years past, we wanted to bring it to your attention as well. So, if we can jump back to the financial statement audit report, we can flip over to the next page. Compliance and other matters. The results of our test disclose no instances of non-compliance or other matters that are required to be reporting under government auditing standards. What that is referring to is that we take a look at compliance with provisions of laws, regulations, contracts, grant agreements, and anything that could have a direct and material effect on the financial statements, and we did not find any instances of non-compliance in our review of those areas. So we jump over to the next page. This is our actual audit report on the financial statements. And like I said earlier, we issued an unqualified opinion, and that is the highlighted area there in the middle of that page. In our opinion, financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the financial position and results of operations of the City of Monroe for the year ended December 31st, 2011. And that is our financial statement audit report. So this will be included with the financial statements, and it will be published on our website and will also be provided to the city.
Any questions about that?
Yes. Sorry, kind of blazed through that. Brendan, or I guess the area that you guys are probably most concerned with is our next audit report that we'll go through, and that's the accountability audit report. So that's the one with the yellow cover sheet. And so page one is the audit summary. So we took a look at, like I said, 2011, and actually with the accountability report, we go up through our last day on site. And so the areas that we took a look at, we took a look at the financial condition, cost allocation plan, and then there were several citizen concerns, one regarding the charging of fees, one of them was regarding the impact fees, and another was regarding public records. We also took a look at the sale of property, procurement cards, and the sole source. And the results of are auditing these eight areas. We found that the city complied with state, in most of the areas, the city complied with state laws and regulations, as well as its own policies and procedures. We did notice some issues that we would like to discuss with you, and they're presented in the second page of the management letter, or I guess the very last page, which is the allocation of shared costs. And so one of the things that was discussed here at the city a few years back, we did the cost allocation audit. I believe it was, I did that audit in 2009. So fiscal year 2009, came back and took a look at it during our performance audit. And we found some issues with the way that the cost allocation plan was being done previously. And we made some recommendations here to the city. And, you know, first and foremost, I want to say congratulate you for addressing those issues. The cost allocation plans you have in place, you have essentially four different cost allocation plans, one for each one of your internal service funds, and then one for your general fund as well. And the cost drivers that the city uses to allocate the costs are reasonable and make sense. The reason for this management letter that we've found is that the three allocation plans that were related to the internal service funds were based on budgeted numbers at the beginning of the year. And so at year end, there needs to be an reconciliation that's done so that that allocation is based on actual expenditures that occurred during the year. So what we found was of the $997,000 that were allocated, we found about $41,000 were overcharged to the utility funds. And one of the internal service funds that was used, the allocation plan was lost. There was some issues with software and programs being lost in the IT department, and so we weren't able to actually look at that plan from 2011, but we were able to see that the 2012 plan that was used for that. So the biggest recommendation that I had, that I, you know, I sat down with city staff, and one of the recommendations that we have that will address the reconciliation at year end is to do a two-year look back. And so what that means is you base your allocation plan on actual expenditures from 2 years prior. So when you're doing your 2013 plan, you would base it off of 2011 actuals. So you're always getting that true up. It's just a couple year lag between those expenditures being allocated to the internal service fund for their portion of those expenses that are paid out of those funds. So any questions regarding that? All right. Well, we can jump over the second page on the accountability audit report. It's just saying the report, another report that was issued in conjunction with the accountability is a financial statement report that we just chatted about. Page three, this is the description of the city. So I encourage all of you to go through this. Make sure that everything that's on here is correct. If you see anything that you would like to have changed, just send me an email. And we'll make sure that we get any of those changes in this description for you guys prior to the report being issued as final.
Let me pipe up here. I think the most important thing we have to make sure of is that we spelled all your names correctly.
Mine is misspelled.
Yours is?
No.
Yes, Brian.
Did I really? Yeah,
it's cut it back. B-A-C-K.
I think I'm going to have to go check the website because I'm pretty sure I pulled it all off.
I'm going to probably sit.
So the last document, this is just basically a summarization of what we've chatted about. The very first page on this exit document, it lists all of the contact information. On the left, you'll see our new state auditor, Troy Kelly. The director of state and local audit, Chuck File, his phone number and email is in there, as well as deputy director, Kelly Collins. Our audit manager, Casey's information is presented there as well. She was unable to make it tonight. And then Janie and myself. And if you'll jump to the second page, towards the bottom, new auditing standards require that we report whether or not we have any difficulties with staff in getting information. We had none. In fact, staff has been a pleasure to work with over the last 3 years that I've done this audit. You know, I just wanted to give a big thank you to them for providing all the information. I know that some of it was extensive, and requested multiple times to make sure that we got the information correct, but they were all very helpful and willing to do whatever they could.
If I could add to that too, just a special thank you, Diane and Brad. Thank you so much for your help. It really helps us a lot.
And then the other required communication is that box right there at the bottom of page 2. These are the uncorrected statements. And so I went through with Diane on these, and we agree with the city that these aren't big issues. And so by not correcting these, it's not going to change anything with the financial statements. But it's something to think about going forward. And those were addressed in our conversation with regarding the management letter over the financial statement preparation. And lastly, if we can jump over to page 4, here are all the prior recommendations that we've had. As you can see, when we take a look at the areas that we tested, determined that the issues were resolved, a couple of areas weren't tested, and the financial statement preparation issue that was a management letter in the 2010 audit is something that was unresolved, as you can see, that we still found some stuff during the current year. The next scheduled audit that we have will be in fall 2013, and I chatted with Jean and Diane about that as well. The city is eligible to go to a two-year cycle. So with any city that has $10 million in revenues or above, it's an annual basis. That's something that our office is extending to cities of low risk. We're extending them the option to be able to go to a two-year audit cycle. With that being said, the accountability and financial statement audit, instead of being fall 2013, would be fall 2014. However, the thing to keep in mind is, in years past, you have had a federal single audit, and for those years that you spend more than $500,000 in federal awards, you will need to have a financial single audit, and the accountability would be cycled every 2 years. So that's something to consider. If you'd like to chat about that more, please feel free to give me a call. Like I said, my phone number for my office is listed on the front page of this exit document, as well as my email address that I will get back to within 24 hours of any of those correspondence. The estimated cost for the next audit will be about $41,000 and plus travel expenses. And like I said, if you guys do spend more than $500,000 in federal awards, please let us know, because we will have to schedule your audit sooner than when I was out here to perform it last time. We will be issuing a customer service survey that will go to Diane, and one will go to Jean as well. We encourage any feedback you have for us, not only myself, any of the staff that are on site, Jamie, Casey, any of your interactions with our office. We would appreciate any feedback that you guys have for us. It helps us do our jobs better, so we appreciate that. Any questions?
Any questions or comments? Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. Thanks for the support. Appreciate it. I just want to say thanks to staff and everybody who is here on a daily basis, the mayor and administrator and all the department heads. This is a great report. Again, it looks like 11 in a row. So thanks. It makes hearing the report easy. So job well done. Thank you.
Anybody else? Well, I tell you, I appreciate your comments this evening. The things that I took away from this was, too, that as Councilmember Gearing stated, staff, I think, has done a phenomenal job in keeping up with all the expectations that set forth and in those areas that were areas of need. Staff has been very responsive, and I do understand that the relationship between staff and yourself has been very positive. With that, I believe that I understand you will not be back.
I will not. No, this was my third year, and every 3 years we cycle the auditors in charge for our audits to get a pair of fresh eyes in here.
So. Yeah. Well, we appreciate the pair of eyes that you have for the detail that you looked through. And the findings that you have brought forth tonight. I know it wasn't easy getting to that point. I saw you a couple times just stretching through things, it's a job that I would never want. It's just how you can do it. It takes a special person to appreciate you coming out for the last 3 years, and if you look at your life on the next occasion. So the second thing I picked up on is that in the extension of the in your extension of the offer for us to go every other year, I think that it sends a message out to the community in very loud volume that again staff is doing all they can to ensure that they are managing the finances of the city and of our residents as best as they possibly can. Now whether or not we choose to go every other year is another thing. Council will set forth policy with regards to that, but the options on the table, and I think it says a lot for what staff has been able to accomplish.
I spoke with Gene and Diane about that, and one of the things that Gene requested that we bring it up here.
Yep.
So that it's on the table for you guys to make that decision.
Well, that was easy. That was good. I enjoyed it. I don't normally enjoy budget, review discussions. I kind of sleep through most of them.
People don't enjoy us. No, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, throughout the year now, if you have any questions, our email address is on, that's the best way to get
all of us.
Great.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Okay. All right, well, next on the agenda this evening is our consent agenda. Do I have a motion to approve, or do we have any questions? Councilor Petovac.
I just have one question. Did the attorney, he's not present tonight, did he look over his contract?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
Thanks, John.
Then I will make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign contract with Cascade Materials and Aggregates for biosolid management for the WWTP upon full execution of required backup documentation.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilor Petovac and seconded by Councilor Jerian as read.
We pointed out that you could have just said motion to approve.
They like to point out my failings.
Well, either way, we have a motion, and we'll take a vote at this time. Councilor Geering. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
And opposed. Our new business tonight. Tonight, we have two presentations for Council. One by our distinguished police chief, Quinzer, and second by our parks director, and also an equally distinguished director, Mike Farrell. As I shared a couple of weeks ago, staff and I met at the end of last year and had some discussion as to our goals for 2013 and beyond. And so tonight's presentation is really to accomplish two things. Hopefully, one is to communicate to you both some intended goals for 2013, but also to lay the foundation for future desires from both departments. So, looking forward to these reports and looking forward to a lot of information, or at least laying the groundwork for a lot of discussion in the future. Chief?
Well, I will start out by saying that what we're going to present tonight is not going to be real flashy, it's not going to be real exciting, it's just going to be the needs of the department and the goals that we have. So,
if we're going to have a presentation, well, maybe not.
I need bigger print. Okay, the first goal is we're asking the council to consider a ballot measure for a 0.2% tax increase. This would create a dedicated funding source for public safety. Currently, the police department is 100% funded from the general fund, which is funded from property and sales taxes. 25% of our calls for service are for property owners. The sales tax increase would target more fairly the additional 75% that are also users of public safety services. In 2010, the police department budget was scaled back to a bare bones budget that would only hold if there was no large crimes. In that year, we made it to August before we had a homicide downtown. We were able to pay for expenses related to this investigation through savings from our budget by putting off planned purchases. In 2011, again, our budget was reduced from 2010, again, hoping for no large crimes to occur. We made it less than 30 days before a homicide occurred that we continue to work today. Our current price tag for this particular homicide is over $500,000. An outside source is funding this investigation. In 2012, our budget was even lower than the previous year, and we had a homicide in January and a second one in March. The second investigation continues, and partial funding has come from other channels for this investigation. In 2013, our budget is lower than 2012. We're already starting out the year behind, as we've had an officer resign effective the first of the year, and we have the potential of one to two more officers that have given notice that they may be leaving. We're currently actively testing for officers to fill these positions. That testing costs the department money that has not been budgeted for. This also strains our existing manpower, as we already are at bare bones minimum staffing. Due to the extensive training process, we will not see a new hire on the road working until the first quarter of 2014. As you can see, our budget has decreased for the last 4 years, which has resulted in the police department being underfunded. If we had not been fortunate enough to use monies that are not normally available to us, the city would be in dire straits. 0.2% would mean that for every $100 spent in the city, 20 cents of the sales tax would go to the public safety fund. This 0.2% also will exclude motor vehicle dealers in the city of Monroe. It's written in the RCW that excludes them. So, items that this money could be used for: we could hire potentially up to 3 additional officers. This would replace some of the officer positions that have been vacant since 2010. This would allow us to put back into place our 3 beat system that strategically places on-duty personnel throughout the city. It reduces response time. Loss of manpower over the last 3 years has increased our response times to every and all crimes. We could also purchase patrol vehicles to replace costly older vehicles. We could also get some cutting-edge equipment. Law enforcement continues to evolve as technology does. It is our goal in the Monroe Police Department not just to be a police department, to be the police department. Our second goal, it seems that we partially achieved it already. We will be establishing the City of Monroe Municipal Court January 1st, 2015. We've gone over the last several weeks the savings that we expect to have occur because of that. And we thank you very much for your authorizing that. In October 2012, we had a mock reaccreditation resulting in suggestions for improvements before moving forward with our reaccreditation. One of the biggest obstacles to our department is the state of our evidence room and impound lot. Our current evidence room does not have climate controls to keep evidence protected from extreme temperatures, which is an accreditation standard. It also has vents that open to other rooms, which is a security risk, and there's also an ongoing problem with roof leaks and pests that have made their way into the evidence room. It is important to note that evidence from the previously mentioned homicides are kept in this room, and destruction or contamination could affect the outcome of these cases. Mm-hmm. Our impound lots are used to bring in vehicles as evidence from vehicle assaults, homicides, or vehicles with suspected drugs in them that are awaiting search warrants. These impound lots are not alarmed, which is also an accreditation standard that we have to meet. This past year, we had someone break into the impound lot and remove drugs from a vehicle before we could obtain a search warrant. We've asked property management to look at these two areas for improvements in 2013. If money was needed, this could be another example of a use for the public safety fund. Our last goal for 2013 is another suggestion coming out of the mock accreditation improvement, improving our department policy and procedures manuals to enter into the Lexapol program. This is a program that develops and helps us develop and keep current our department policy and procedures manuals. Keeping these manuals and department policy up to date is very time consuming and difficult to train all the officers in. Many agencies in the state of Washington are using the Lexapol system, which provides a customizable policy manual based on federal and state laws, regulations, and law enforcement best practices. These policies are written by legal and law enforcement professionals who constantly monitor court decisions, legislation, and emerging trends in law enforcement operations. The policies are up to date, legally defensible, and electronically available to the whole department. In addition, they have daily training bulletins that are scenario-based and linked directly to our policy manual. Officers would do a short training session every day to keep current with the policies. One thing that I'd also like to add that the policies from Lexapol would also be direct or linked to our accreditation standards that we have to meet. Our first year subscription is $6,950, and after the first year, it drops to $2,850 per year. And that's all I have. Any questions?
Chief, so with the proposed the sales tax increase, that would be something that the council would need to take action on as a way to put on the ballot. Was there a specific time frame? It maybe mentioned it, and I didn't hear. Was there a time frame you were hoping for?
We need to have council action by, I believe it's May. We would like to put it on the August ballot, the primary ballot.
Is there any, let's say it didn't make it on until November, is there an issue one way or the other? Just sooner the better type of thing? Get it done?
Yeah, we'd like to get it done. We'd like to. We think that the August ballot is most appropriate for this.
For success, et cetera. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, that's close. Councilmember Gamble.
A couple questions, Chief. So the you mentioned that the average response time had decreased. Is that
increased?
Oh, that's what I meant to say. Sorry, increased. Is that in, or is the, you said the trending is that way? Is that in your in the departmental report that I can look at?
I'm not aware if it's in our departmental reports.
Okay, and then is that how is that measured and tracked?
It's measured from the time that the call is put out to the time that the officer arrives at the scene.
I'd like to see that information to see how much of a decrease it's been.
Increase.
Or sorry, I keep saying the wrong increase over the last few years. And then you'd also mention the cost of bringing an officer on board in the discussions there. What I'm looking at, what's the delta? Because obviously those positions that part of the people are resigning, correct? those are budgeted positions, and as we're searching, and we have one that we're currently not, that's already resigned, is gone, so that's an expense that's not going, out. So what is the average cost of bringing an officer on board?
If we have to bring an officer on board, send him through the academy, if it's not a lateral transfer, which is very hard to come by now, it's approximately $100,000 by the time they're out on the street working full-time by themselves.
Perfect. Thanks. Anything further, Councilman McGill?
No.
Councilman Williams?
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you, Mayor. Chief, what's the budget that you're looking for on the evidence room and the email bot?
I don't have a dollar figure on that yet.
Okay. Is that something that you can come back and give us that number?
We're going to have to work at figuring what the actual costs would be. We haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay. And then the question on the policy manual that you're looking for, how does that currently get updated today? Like, what's the process for how you keep the existing policy manual updated?
The current process is someone from the command staff will review a court decision and look at our policies and determine if it affects us or not. And then we have to manually update the manual. We don't have the expertise that Lexapol has. They have attorneys that review court decisions and see if they apply to us, if they actually apply to, or whether it's federal or state. And then if in fact they do, then they notify us and they give us an update to our manual.
And is that something that happens a lot during the course of a year, or does it kind of ebb and flow? Or
They are in their, I guess you could say, sales pitch, they do it twice a year. Once your manual is in place, unless there's an emergent need to notify us or immediately say there's a Supreme Court decision on something that would affect us immediately, then they would notify us immediately.
Thank you.
Councilor Kevin.
Thank you. Chief, I just had one question about Lexapol. So would that have any impact on lowering our current attorney's fees whatsoever if we were to subscribe to this? I don't know how often the department consults with...
I would say minimal.
Okay.
Minimal.
Thanks.
Any other questions for the chief? Well, I think what Chief Quinzer has outlined here today is really really does state, I think, very clearly the deficits that we have in our department. At the same time, I think that Chief Quinzer and the department need to be commended for being able to respond to and accommodate the needs of the community as well as they have, even though our staffing level on the street is lower than it was in 2006 or 8, 9, one of those years. And it's just it's a testament to the capable men and women that we have in the department, the job that they do, and as well as they do. And as Chief said, some might be happy with that, having a police department that is sufficient in meeting needs. I think that the Chief and I, our desire is that we have the police department that not only meets the needs of our community, but helps to prevent some of the things that, some things before they happen. And the need for a third zone, police zone, or area, as he's described, I think would be hugely impactful in helping to do a couple of things. One is connect our officers with the community a little better, and two, in creating a greater presence in areas of the community, help to alleviate or eliminate
even the temptation one might have to commit a criminal act. And so with that, I think that, as the chief said, the reasonable steps to take in funding our improvements and continuing to maintain and have the premier police department in Snohomish County, it would be unfair, let's say, to ask the homeowners to bear that those costs and the weight of that cost solely on their shoulders when only 25% of the calls are to homeowners. 75% of those calls are coming from outside of the city. Those who are coming in are through the city of Monroe. And so as a way to help support that is through the sales tax. And so it's my goal and my hope that council will be supportive of placing that on the ballot in August, and also supporting it with in your discussions with the community and your constituents. So, I've always said I'm not a tax increase guy, but I am one who will go to the public to see where their priorities are and ask them if this is a priority that they'd like to support. Priority law enforcement in our police department is of great importance to me, and so if it comes on the ballot, I will be voting in favor for it. So, with that said, Councilmember Gamble.
Just wanted to echo a lot of the comments that Mayor Zimmerman just said, and that my questions were very much geared towards the chief, that you know, in light of the recent climate and some of the different things that have been floated out there, that you know, I would be in support as well. I'm probably not a tax increase guy either, but very much, as the mayor has just spoken very well. But I think what's important, or what has been shown, is that if, in order for something like that to get passed, is for us to be very with the numbers to show, you know, the statistics, what's in it for me, you know, why it's important, and be able to visually show that. So some of the, maybe I'll be asking probably more as we go, but even looking to the school board, when they just passed the most recent maintenance levy, really focusing on, you know, zeroing in the message if it's going to be successful. So.
Chief, thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, do you have a presentation?
It's all paper.
Yeah, we can throw a lot of stuff.
Something that the police department does is help to ensure that our parks are safe. And so I felt that this combination or this combination of police and parks would complement each other this evening. That and the fact that they both start with the letter P. So it's easy for me to do that. But Mike, you have some things to share with us tonight. We've talked a little bit about them. I'm excited about what you have, and hopefully council will be too.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay. So what you have is you have a ton of information in your packets, and so you can chew on that while I give you an introduction to these goals that are really priorities that I'd like to see that this like to gain the support of the council, but things that I'd like to see us be able to achieve this year and in those coming years, in the not-so-distant future. So with that, I'm going to start the new year and an update to our park plan that's budgeted for this year. There are several, as I mentioned, exciting opportunities ahead of us. And that's outside of these 4 points I want to raise. We have some new exciting programs, events. We have the planning for the new improvements. So we have lots of things that are going on. However, do I have to prioritize some things? Well, this is what really rises to the top. The past successes of our department in these areas of programs, events, facility improvements, and planning are large, have occurred largely due to an openness to explore new ideas as well as old ideas, and to collaborate, partner, reach out to members of our community and beyond. And with these points that I'm going to be making, I'm going to show examples of how we do that. And the goals listed below, they've been longstanding desires of our community that I believe hold unique opportunities for both short and long-term success and implementation. So first, I'd like to start with the park plan update. Now, the park board, and I want to introduce Steve Whalen, sitting here in front, a member of our park board, Pastor Steve Whalen, and the other park board members who are not here, but I just want to mention their names. Ralph Yingling serves on the park board, Jeff Rasmussen, Shauna Chamberlain, Karen Coppernall, Bill Christensen, and Colette Reams. They're all eager to get started on laying the groundwork for that park plan update process, in which they will assist, along with public input, in reviewing and narrowing the needs of our community and developing a new six-year plan and a long-term strategy for park and facility improvement. So I'm really excited. This will be my second time here in Monroe of being a part of the park plan update process. That update is required every 6 years per the Growth Management Act, and it is done in order to remain eligible to apply and receive state and federal grants, which we have in the past and we seek to in the future. So more information on this update process will be forthcoming, so you'll be seeing that. And that makes me move on to the next opportunity for a city-led music festival event in 2013. And so, as outlined in your packets, a local artist musician, Keith Brock, proposed to city staff a concept for a music festival last year at Lake Tai Park. The vision is twofold. One, to produce a high-quality music event featuring several well-known musician artists, and secondly, to promote the city and its brand, and he wanted relating his personal story of achieving his dream to the city's vision, and thereby the theme of Dare to Dream, Follow Your Dreams. The one-day music festival we're planning for September of this year would consist of 1 to 2 opening acts, bands, and they would be local bands from our area, followed by a headliner all-star band that would play a mix of jazz, blues, rock, and country. Keith shared with us the concept with several of his peers in the music industry. And if you read his bio, which I had attached there, you can see that he has quite a significant career in music. And schedule permitting, he's spoken with several potential performers, and they include John Popper, who's the front man for the band Blues Traveler. And John Popper also lives just outside of Monroe. Was not aware of that. So. Jimmy Paxson, drummer for Stevie Nicks, Carl Verheyen, lead guitarist for Supertramp, Dave Morata, bass guitar for Kenny Loggins, and Colby Collette, I'm probably pronouncing the name Collette, yeah, thank you. Phil Susan, bass guitarist for Ozzy Osbourne, Billy Idol, David Rosenthal, keyboardist for Billy Joel, Teddy Andreas, keyboardist for Guns N' Roses, Alice Cooper, and others. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting to have these professionals with their, you know, their backgrounds and what they do today being willing to come to Monroe to put on a really professional music event. So it's exciting. It's just something that, you know, a music event, we've always had that as a goal in our community, and we have this opportunity. The costs, we met with Keith about breaking down what are the typical costs for this size of event. And the total, just paying for everything, top dollar, which would include artist stage, lighting, sound, backline, food, transportation, lodging, security, dressing room, canopies, fencing, restrooms, marketing, is $50,000. And that would be the top, most conservative estimate as far as it'll be less than that, but it would not exceed $50,000 for this type of an event. Now, as proposed, what we want to do is the event is expected to generate revenues that cover these expenses, and that would be through admission, ticketing of the event, food and drink sales, and other concessions at the event, A lot of in-house work with not only city staff, the various departments that can assist with putting on the event, as we've assisted other events that we've had in the park. Our economic development manager, he's excited to have the opportunity to seek sponsorships from some of our local businesses. So we have a tremendous opportunity to get some real buy-in and support from the community, from businesses, from organizations. The Chamber of Commerce has lent their support in any way they can to that, and we're open to anyone else. This is something that we're laying the groundwork for this to happen. The event, as proposed, is, as I mentioned earlier, is expected to pay for itself and also to develop some revenue, which we then can use to establish a music festival fund to support future music performances here in Monroe. And this is something that we've done with other activities, whether it's the movies in the park, whether it's the egg hunt, is we get this established, a fund that then supports itself. I'm just going to add one other thing, is that I've been consulting with staff from the fairgrounds and also reaching out to other parks departments as far as getting that information, as far as what are the next steps. And that leads me to refinement of the budget is our next step, and development of required agreements and contracts and insurance that would be following. So that's an exciting opportunity that we have, an opportunity for 2013 that I would like to seek council support on. Next, a citizen-initiated renovation plan for the skate park at Lake Ty Park. And I want to introduce a couple of other folks. Todd Yingling, I believe he's there. Yes, there, Todd. And Aris Williams. Thanks. They both are from our local area. Todd, as a youth, I believe, was involved with supporting and helping to develop the initial skate park that we have at the park. And Aris, last summer, if you recall, we had a Northwest Grind, we had a skateboard demonstration event and competition. He runs that. He also runs a business with skateboarding products. And anyways, they both approached me separately. And we got together and for the same goal of some really neat, as you can see in your packet, improvements to the skate park that are both visual and something that draws not only our folks that live here in Monroe of all ages, but also could bring folks from outside as a destination holding skateboard events. I'm going to read you a letter from the park board in support of this project that summarizes what exciting work has occurred to date, what opportunities lie ahead. Now, this letter was approved at the last park board meeting this last Thursday. Dear Monroe City Council, as Ty Park increasingly becomes a recreational landmark for Monroe and the entire Sky Valley, the Parks and Recreation Board investigates opportunities that will benefit our community and contribute to development of Monroe's destination brand, while endeavoring to ensure that our city continues to showcase our region's beauty by providing aesthetically pleasing recreational venues. The board was contacted last year by individuals with a vision to transform our existing skate park into a cutting-edge, world-class skate park that will be utilized as a venue for exciting events and also present Monroe with a beautiful Civic Center-style plaza. We have been provided with drafts of potential designs that illustrate how a renovated skate park can rival the top-ranked skate parks around the nation and the world. Such a plan will provide challenging features for skaters, as well as an aesthetically pleasing plaza for public relaxation or for industrial park workers in need of a convenient place to unwind during a break after a day's work. The transformed park will require no new land use and will be a beautifully scenic complement to the wakeboard park once it becomes operational. And the board continues, it would be an honor and pleasure to present this project in more detail to you at your convenience in order for you to better envision the beautiful addition it can provide to our community. The funding side of it, as again in the materials, if you notice, the idea is for sponsoring phases of the park, fundraising, the work that's gone into the conceptual plan, from Todd and Aris. You know, these are things that really, as I mentioned in the beginning about that partnering, collaborating, really finding some value in these projects. This is just a great example of that. So we're excited to be able to put this project as one of the priorities in that park plan update as well. And then the last point that I want to make is the master plan for future park development of the cabin site at Sky River Park. I believe earlier last year you were presented with the conceptual site plan, and I have copies of that in your packet. City staff, Paul Popelka is here, Jeff Sachs is here, Dale Olson from the Parks Department, and myself. We met with folks from Cabin and worked through a restoration concept for Cabin, given that the State Department of Natural Resources requires that they do reclamation work at the site prior to transfer of the land for future public park purposes. So this plan sets the stage for the filling, grading, and restoring the East Pond for the eventual dedication to the city for park space. And as I shared in the packet, the plan includes an entry area with parking, trailhead, boat launch, picnic gathering area, an RV group camping area, paved trail around the pond, and additional picnic and trail extensions into the adjacent Sky River Park, an eventual connection to the Centennial Trail. And with the park plan update this year, we would like to incorporate site planning refinements here with public input to be included in the plan update. So, as I mentioned in the beginning, the goals have been longstanding desires of our community that I believe hold unique opportunities for both the short and long-term successes in implementation. I'm seeking your support. And at this point, I'll take any questions.
Well, Mike, thanks. A couple items I'm sure will come on here in a minute. But I just want to say that these things really are exciting for our community and have the potential to not only serve our residents, but to draw in, as you said, folks from throughout the region, as well as develop facilities that will rival other facilities throughout the world. The parks or the skateboard park, I think, as the Parks Board mentioned in their letter, I believe will be a great complement to the wakeboard park, and the cabin facility will be a perfect complement to Sky River Park and the uses that we have out there. So I just want to say I appreciate the thought that you've given with regards to these and these two items, as well as the potential for having a music festival, which has been a long-standing goal that the Parks Department has had. Keith, what's Keith's last name?
Brock.
Yeah, Keith Brock. I happened to be him in Safeway one night, and there he was, and we hadn't met until this point. And the excitement that he had on his, on his face, and just as he shared the dream that he had for this festival here, was just, it was contagious. And my wife and I were there and speaking with him, and he just went on and on and on. The guy's enthusiasm is awesome. The thing that caught my attention, is here's a Monroe High School graduate who has played with some of the world's most recognizable bands. And he made a statement that night. He said, big things really can come from small places. And I would say that, or big dreams can really come from small places. And so it just really reassures me, or not reassures, it makes me feel good that where we're heading is on the right track, and the things that we're doing, just because we're a little town outside of Seattle, doesn't mean that we can't do them great and have some great outcomes as a result of our plans. So this is good stuff. and appreciate the presentation this evening. Council, anything or any comments or questions for Mike tonight? Oh, I didn't hear it. I don't know. Normally I listen.
Because you didn't press it.
What? Pretty good.
Just some comments. Thank you. Mike, I really appreciate you coming in and giving this presentation. I'm very excited about the possibilities of the skateboard park. It looks really exciting. I think it would be great for that area. So I'm very supportive of hearing more or incorporating and looking where we can go with that. The Cadman site, looking at that park and including it in the park plan is very exciting too. I think that's a great opportunity out there. And having an RV park and possibly tying it to the Centennial Trail, and that's very exciting for our community. As far as the music festival, I'm very supportive of having a music event out here. I think it would be wonderful. My only concern is the budget amount in 2013 and it being a city-led function versus, you know, maybe businesses banding together and putting that forward. And I guess a couple of my questions are, it was this budgeted for this year in 2013 in the park budget?
No, okay. This was not. So what I'm seeking is that budget authority, as a sort of a not to exceed. And my expectation is that we wouldn't even expend that amount, because you're talking about rental deposits, that sort of thing, and then you collect from the ticket sales and the food revenues and whatnot, and paying things. So when you're paying the final payments, we may not need to go that far. And also, as we get the sponsorships in, the ratcheting that bottom line budget down from that amount.
It is this a music festival? Where would it be held? Did I miss that? Is it
Lake Tai Park?
My only concern is, you know, it's a little bit of a risk. You don't know how successful. Yeah. We haven't done it. It would be city money on the line. We might get reimbursed. We might not. It might not be a success. It would hopefully be, but it is an unbudgeted amount where the city is risking $50,000 for the city of Monroe on a music festival we have not done before.
Correct.
And I think most people know me. I'm pretty supportive of these type of events and doing new things and attracting new people, especially something that focuses on culture and art. You know, that speaks to me, but I'm a little bit wary of giving a $50,000 budgeted, authority to do an event that we haven't done when we're talking about going to the taxpayers maybe for an increase in sales tax to help fund police positions that we feel we need. So those are my initial comments. Thank you.
Councilor Geary.
Thank you. So Mike, I do see, first of all, thanks. And that is really exciting. Just the concert going through the list. I saw Ozzy. I had to give the horns. I saw Ozzy on the list. That was awesome. Skate park, all those things it's awesome to see these kind of opportunities, these kind of things come together. It feels like it's been a while, and yet here it is, the momentum. So well done, it's awesome. Pretty much everything, you've touched, it's been good. And from that aspect, I'm definitely supportive of moving forward with the music concert. You are looking for tonight for authorities. It does look as the recommended action is.
Yeah, and why I'm asking tonight, as it's being introduced to you tonight, is just the fact that with the folks that the musicians themselves that Keith's already kind of talked to is that really need to check their schedules, and get commitments as early as possible. So that's and so that's I'm seeking it tonight. So if possible, and if there's some further information that you seek, maybe coming back, the early part of February, but we really, really would want to get those commitments from those musicians so we could have them come to the event.
Any idea on, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, may I add to there, is that with budget authority, what that does is that communicates a very strong message to the program. To Keith Brock and to individuals
to say that the city is very serious. On a side note, Economic Development Manager Sachs and I are already scheduled, or should be scheduled, to have a meeting with several businesses and the Chamber of Commerce specific to this event. There's already interest from local businesses to participate. So by having that budget authority, no checks will be written, but having that budget authority and say, you know, April or May comes along and it doesn't appear that we're going to move forward, nothing lost, nothing spent. But it does send a very loud message to the potential participants in this. And it also enables us to be able to go to businesses to say, you know, this is something that we are moving towards. Which, again, we've already had a discussion with some businesses in the chamber and meeting again about more possibilities for local business participation and sponsorship. So
in the same way, it's kind of like we talked about last week, a little bit of the EB5 related stuff. You're not writing a check for some giant check. It's the ability to, within that, maybe zero, and the amount of sponsorships coming in may cover, you know, it may be absolute zero expenditure for us. Let's just say that it didn't work out that way. Where would we be proposing to take any of this from?
As I hadn't made a budget request for the 2013 budget, it would be most likely undesignated fund balance.
Okay. So perhaps maybe I'm fine making a motion for this tonight with the caveat that you'll come back with a plan if folks want to wait. I'd like to send the strong message that we'd like to do this myself. I'm really excited about it. I think it is important to have that piece of information. I'll make the motion, see if it flies. If not, it may need to come back next week, but I'm sure others are supportive as well. And so to that end, I will move to authorized budgetary authority up to $50,000 for the 2013 festival event as presented by Parks Director Farrell. I'd be looking for a second. All right, there's not one. So next week, perhaps a little bit more information on where that money would come from, and then I'm sure it'll fly through.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Councilor. Yeah.
Very excited about all the items, and I am about the concert as well, festival. I'm very intrigued by that. But having been involved in the planning of those before and multiple days, and this is just one day. Yeah, but I know that there's a lot of things that can, you know, there's a lot of risk that's out there, including the attendance based on weather, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I guess what I would just feel more comfortable, and I get the musician thing, although I will tell you that I have found personally that even once you give them that, getting their schedules can be extremely difficult if they get a better gig for more things. But that's a totally different thing. But just a breakdown, you know, on that, who's in charge, you know, who would be using a consultant that is doing this, unless maybe I don't know if you've done it before. But there is quite a bit involved in just an overall music, you know, festival, you know, piece. So I would just feel comfortable seeing that plan a little more than before doing budget authority for the amount that's being requested.
Okay, appreciate it. Yeah, and just as a kind of, you know, a little bit of feedback from me on that point. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of great support from what's her name? Deb at the fairgrounds. And that she puts on the big events, all of those music concerts at the fair. And exactly what you're talking about, that breakout, that's our next step is to break out the budget and also to break out who's doing what. And putting together contracts. And that, again, gets to the commitment a little bit more than what the mayor was mentioning with the musicians. It gets to a commitment on our part, because then we're going to need to, you know, look at legal and that sort of stuff. So then there is some sort of a commitment financially for the time spent on those sorts of activities. But we can get, I can get and will get more of a breakdown of information for you on on the costs, where, you know, what we expect them to come from, or where, I mean, and how it all breaks out.
Yeah, you know, maybe Jeff, you could land a title sponsor, and we could be presented.
I can think
something like that out of the bag would make it a lot more, you know, or I just would feel a lot more comfortable with that.
Would you mind voting on it before we announce the sponsor? I did want to just add on to what Mike has to say here is, what I think is exciting, we have Keith Brock, and he is a professional music promoter. This is what he does for a living, on top of playing music. He's a local guy, he owns a local business. Some of you have heard of Soul Food. It's a local, he inherited it from his family. He's very well-grounded in our town. But our parks department, this is our next logical extension, and forgive me for using the term business line, but to get into the festival promotion aspect of it, and a lot of parks departments around the country do this very thing on an annual basis. And this again is an expense and a revenue line item that we're asking for. And this is a case for our parks department to gain a substantial amount of experience at what I believe is a minimal risk in working with a professional promoter. In addition to that, we have some other folks in town through the Chamber of Commerce and also through High Road Productions or Promotions, the folks who run the Speedway have expressed interest in this project. And they run, you know, an operation like this every Saturday night, pretty much 6-7 months a year. So there's talent that we can tap into, and there's substantial interest. And I think really what at the ground of this is Keith has talked to his former music director from Monroe High School. I think he's got 3 former music band directors from Monroe High School lined up to play with him. So this is a celebration of Monroe and music that's come out of Monroe, and just an opportunity for, I think, Monroe in general to celebrate a lot of the good things that have happened here after kind of a dry, dour economy. And low-risk endeavor, high possibility of experience that our parks department will retain. And I think it's an opportunity to really do something fun for our town. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll echo what Gamble said, that, you know, it'd be very helpful knowing that here's one or two other sponsors. It's one thing to hear, hey, I'm with you.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, write me a check. I'm not quite so with you anymore. But, I mean, just to know that there's other people that are going to step up and just a little more. This kind of happened pretty fast, and I think most of us are just a little shocked. And that's why I think there was no second to the motion. But some more information as far as, like, you know, how the whole process will work. How's the food, how are we going to get paid for some of this other stuff? Just a little more information.
Parking. Just some logistical formalization of the verbalization that's going on.
You like that?
Formalization.
And I also want to echo, I am very impressed with what our parks department, specifically you've succeeded in literally, since I've been on council, everything you've touched seems to has happened. So I think that you have a lot of confidence from people here. It's just that, you know, $50,000
sure.
for a music festival with very little information is a tough sell any night.
Yeah. Well, last week you were saying that government doesn't go fast enough, so I said, put them on there. Put them to the test.
Well, yeah, thank you, Councilman. And, bring a thought. I'm excited about this. This is an example of one of these. Like, it was a fast moving, and it continues to be a fast moving. You know, we spoke late fall. You know, and so, you know, really, we set a real aggressive goal that, hey, let's see if we can do it this year, and let's do it. And so here we are, in January. You know, and we're coming to you and you're introducing this. And I will come back at the next meeting with and some more information that I hope will satisfy most of the questions.
Great. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I have to echo everything Councilmember Williams said. You've done an exceptional job with it. I would be more encouraged, especially after what Mr. Sack said about the Speedway. They have the experience, the infrastructure, and know everything about us, how to set up. I feel much more encouraged if I knew that we have that resource and that expertise coming on this. That's the only issue I really have at this point. And it sounds like we're going to get more information later.
Yeah.
That's it. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments with regards to any of the topics that Mike has presented this evening? Mike, thank you again.
Thank you. And I just want to thank again Aris Williams and Todd Yingling and also Steve Whalen for coming tonight. And we will bring back more of that, the skate park improvements to you, because I know they're just itching to tell you all about it.
And I was just a little teaser, so I haven't met personally with Mr. Yingling, but I have met with Aris, and I tell you what, a lot of passion in that man. Not just with regards to the sport, but to those who participate in the sport. I think he's got a great story, just his life. And if you ever have an opportunity to go to lunch and meet, I would suggest. And I've heard the same with regards to the other gentleman involved as well. And I'll just say today, give me a call if I'd like to meet with you as well. So, again, thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. Exciting things ahead. All right. We are going to move in now to new business item number 2. I need to bring my other glasses now. This is the approval of letter of intent expanding the city of Monroe Water Service Area. Encompass Sky Metal Water Association boundaries. Is it Brad? Is that you?
Start with.
Okay, and then.
You want to send the Jacobs here tonight? Sometimes when he's not, you say.
Yes, I know.
Okay, as you know, it seems like the last 20 years we've been negotiating with the Sky Metal Water Association for taking over all or part of their service area. Recently, they've decided that it might be in their best interest to get rid of their operation entirely and have the City of Monroe take over their entire operation. They sent us a letter of intent. We had that reviewed by our legal counsel, and basically we've countered with another letter of intent because some of the things that were in their letter of intent our legal counsel thinks aren't legal. So we kept our letter of intent a little bit more general, and we'll allow their lawyer and our lawyer to get together to work out the details. If you look at the map that was included in your packet, I think the last attachment, which is attachment number 3, the red area to the left of the map, this sort of looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex kind of, is their current service area. And the blue parcels are all the properties that have current water service from them. And as you can see, some of the parcels are outside of their current water service area. So as part of this takeover, if it's ultimately successful, we will be going before the Snohomish County Water Utility Coordinating Committee to expand our water service area to the entire yellow dashed line, which basically makes a nice area that includes all the people who have water from them now. So we would recommend that you authorize the mayor to sign the letter of intent for us to send back to the Sky and Meadow Water Association Board for their consideration. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Did I cover everything?
Yeah. Councilmember Ketterbeck.
Thank you. Brad, just to be clear, the letter of intent doesn't bind us to anything. It just allows us to negotiate more and come to terms, which will be brought
Correct.
Back to us. Okay.
Correct.
Based on that, and I don't have any additional questions about it. I read the letter, so I'll make a motion to authorize the mayor to sign a letter of intent dated January 16th, 2013, to Sky Meadow Water Association.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Ketterbeck, seconded by Councilmember Davis to authorize the mayor to sign the intent dated January
2013 to Scott Matta Water Association. Anything further, Councilmember Pettit? Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. Brian, we talked about this before. At that point in time, really no one from the city had gone up and looked at the equipment or really assessed it. Have we been able to get up there and get a better sense for what we would be inheriting?
Not yet.
Okay. Is that part of what would happen after the letter of intent goes forward?
Yeah, that would actually be a condition of acceptance at that point. So we'd send a letter of intent, negotiate a deal, and then a condition of acceptance, kind of like buying a home almost with that inspection piece. And we would do that at that point. That would be fairly late.
Okay. And then their other alternative was going back to the county. What was it?
That's the Snohomish PUD, serves water to the electric utility, is also a water utility. So they serve water to the next adjacent system over. And that was their other alternative. Yeah.
Okay, and are they still pursuing that alternative? Do you know?
Not actively, no.
They're not. Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions for Brad or Jacob? I'm seeing none. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you so much. Okay, moving on to final action number one, approve address and street name master plan.
Oh, gotcha.
Address and street name master plan, which we have a map that says that on it that was last updated in 1991. And it didn't really say anything about addresses. But from tribal knowledge, as we call it, in 1991, we talked with the city administrator then, Mr. Doug Jacobson, and the city council about how we were going to address parcels inside the city limits. And it was decided at that time that the core of downtown would use the city grid system, which basically 00 starts at Main and Lewis. And then everything else, all the new developments, would use the county grid system, which is 164 blocks north and 179 blocks west of us is where 00 is. And the reason this is coming into you today is because Mr. Gearing had asked when you approved the preliminary plat of Dennis Way, and I told him not to bring it up at that time. He'd have an opportunity later to discuss how those were addressed. And the owner of the plat wants to start building some houses down there, model homes, and we need to get addresses, so that's why this came up kind of the last minute. So the green colored pieces of property have basically three-digit addresses, or down here there's four, just a little bit west of here, that are in the city grid. The orange parcels have county grid addresses. The white line pretty much delineates the area that has the current green addresses, three digits. The only difference is this is the new park that Mike talked about, and so if that ever gets developed and turned over to us, or when it does not, yeah, it will have a city grid address as opposed to Cadman, which is off 177th right now, which will keep their county grid address. The interesting part is Dennis Addition, which is just down the street from us, which is the plat that's being finalized right now, and 159th Street here. Those both have county five-digit addresses. There's three houses in the Dennis Way area that have five-digit address, and there's 12 parcels along 159th that have five-digit addresses. Mr. Gary, did you send him the email you sent me?
No, I printed out a map that was a little clearer about that. Yeah. Just showing where that parcel is right in the center.
He mentioned that that was kind of a little enclave there that should be county, should be city grid addresses, at least initially right now, before his grander scheme of changing everybody in the city, was to make that one just more of a block without a little blob of orange in the middle of it. The thing that would happen if we did that was that you'd have, I'm assuming you changed the existing houses that were there too. So there'd be basically between 50, I think there's two duplexes, so there'd be 17 residents that would have to change their addresses, the ones on 159th and the ones on Dennis Way. So, off to you guys.
Councilmember Aguirre.
I know that's a shock, but I have my light on that one. There was an opportunity, as you told me in the past, 20 years ago, as the Frylands was being developed, to extend the city numbering system throughout town, and that was passed on. That was passed on for some reason. Personally, I think that was a mistake. Let's get to Dennis Way. For ultimately, you need to know about this, what to do with this little piece of this little dark spot, which I colored in on the map. It's completely surrounded by green, and even just. Then that just looks ridiculous for having a city numbering system and then having this little flag of county numbering. If you want to go from Park Lane to Lawrence Street, you go city numbering system, you cross one street of county, and then you go back in the city numbering system as it is today. If we make that, this makes the problem worse, quite frankly, for this particular little piece of land. It's completely surrounded by city grid. It's right in the heart of the city, as you can see on the map. It should be green. That's my contention. From a larger standpoint, you know, I'd say that I'd like to see the entire city. And there's lots of reasons behind that. I think that's a much larger discussion than tonight. I'd like to have that discussion as part of what I see here is the address system and numbering master plan. And I think the first that I knew that there was a master plan when I saw that on the agenda. If you look at 1228010, which I handed out right at the beginning, it says that there's a established a uniform system of numbering properties, which clearly is not true in the city. I believe there are actually five different numbering systems here in town. Academy Way has its own. Houses are numbered 1 through 7, single digits. There's Rivmont.
And Academy Way is an odd and even, different sizes of the street.
That one's weird. There's Rivmont, which of course is all 100s. Again, if we're going to come up with a master plan, I think we need to spend some time looking at the future of the city. Quite frankly, I think we can do better than, you know, numbering our streets from essentially how far away we are from Frontier Village in Stevens and how far away from the Everett Mall we are, which is about where the imaginary lines that run through the county are. We can do, as we're talking about Monroe growing and becoming unique and different from other towns, living on 23rd Avenue would be a lot better than living on 167th Avenue. It gives you a sense of place where you are with regard to Monroe. Why, when you're in Monroe, let's have the center be downtown. So anyway, a larger discussion of that. I think there's a lot of benefits to, again, it keeps the town small as well. It's small in mind, even though we're growing some. But to that end, I think Dennis Way, that area, and not necessarily the 159th, but specifically, because isn't there Dennis Way access off of Main Street?
Yes.
Yeah, and then there's those three, how many houses are there? Three or four?
There's three houses on Dennis Way currently that have.
And then right here, the north of that is this little piece of property.
Yeah, Crispin, right. And there will be, I think it's six houses of the plat that will have access to 159th.
Yeah. And again, my. I think it makes the most sense. We'll leave 159th alone for now until we can have a larger discussion. Dennis Way, I mean, it's a road off of Main Street, for crying out loud. How it's still in the county numbering system anyway is kind of baffling. So I think it's not beyond, it's not outrageous to suggest that this should be in the county grid. With regard to your recommended action, which is to approve a master plan, as long as we can call this interim and we're going to have future development, I could be in support of that, but as this being the final that we're going to move forward, if there's new development out north of Highway 2, things like that, we need to have this discussion before those kind of things start to happen. what do we want the city to, and it's a discussion worthy of happening before additional growth takes place. So anyway, those are my thoughts. Thanks.
So your recommendation or your request tonight would be, or as you're proposing it tonight, is that we're motion to approve address and street interim
master plan with Dennis Way.
That line goes up to there
with the green all the way to the anything new is green, and those and the three houses that are there would become green.
But okay, so the new houses on 159th would be green also.
Anything that's in that orange rectangle.
Right. There are the houses right here will be facing 159th in the orange rectangle.
I don't want to have to change it once and then change it again if we would decide to move forward with changing the county number system. Do it once, do it right
so,
over.
Okay, so all the numbers in the Dennis addition
need to be city grid. Grid. Okay. Need to be city grid. It is surrounded by that. So again, that would be my preference.
I mean, it certainly makes sense to me. And I'm from a perspective of uniqueness here in Monroe, at some point, if it's possible or not, whether we as a governing body have fortitude to move forward in that direction, will be seen. But with your point as to the uniqueness of Monroe and separating Monroe from the from the shadow of Everett becoming an adult, I guess you might say, instead of the redheaded stepchild, of Everett. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, we've moved forward in a number of ways, and I can see the city moving forward in that direction as well. So,
that was a motion to approve in an interim manner with Dennis Webb being green. So, I'll be looking for a second. So what's the motion? The motion is to Brad's recommended action is the motion to approve address and street name master plan. I'm saying interim master plan. So adding the word interim, mm-hmm. and then making, with the change in the map being that the Dennis Way addition, what's being added is green, being the city grid rather than the county grid. Thank you. Second.
I have a motion to be made by Councilmember Tierney and seconded by Councilmember Camp to approve the address and street name interim master plan as discussed to include residents in the Dennis Way, I was thinking Denny's.
You're hungry.
Dennis Way development. Councilmember Pettibeck.
Thank you. Brad, just a couple questions. So this wouldn't change, there's no change to the street signs themselves with this?
No.
This motion. Okay. Just want to make sure that there wasn't a cost to that. I do agree as we look at future development, and it's in the city grid to make it part of the city grid, that makes sense to me. My only question is, you had told me previously about 17 homes would then change their addresses, they would change their street number.
Not under this proposal. Under this proposal would only be three.
Okay, so only three under this would change their street numbers. Just the number on there, which could cause them to change their street number on their house if they have numbering on there. And they haven't been notified to give comment.
No.
But my concern is the plat is looking for building permits. Mm-hmm. So what's your timeline? I mean, is tonight the night we have to make this decision without notifying these three homeowners?
No, we can wait till the 5th.
Well, I guess what I would prefer is we just send the three homeowners a letter just so they have an opportunity to comment that we're looking at changing your number, and if you have any feedback or comments, please let us know. It makes sense to do it. I get that. When Brad and I had talked before, he had said maybe 17 would be affected, and I thought, well, we really...
Yeah, if you include the other one as well, then it would.
Yeah, but, I just thinking giving them an opportunity by a letter saying, we're going to do this, it makes sense, let us know if you have comment. If we have a little bit of time on the 5th, we can go forward, and if we don't get any comment from them or no, just giving them an opportunity to respond. But I agree, within that area... in the city grid makes sense. I do agree with you that if it's within the city limits, it's a much bigger discussion.
Which is why this needs to be interim.
Sure, because Brad had informed me that could be 4,000 to 5,000 homes, and if we do it within the city limits, which would be a much bigger discussion and could have monetarily, you know, implications for homeowners and whatnot. So if we could wait to the 5th, I guess I would like to send a letter out to the 3 homeowners saying we're going to do this. Let us know if you have comments. If not, we're going to look at bringing this back on the 5th for approval. That would be my preference. Thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you, Mayor. I've always believed that Council Member Deering's ultimate plan of world domination starts with getting us to agree to change our house numbering systems. But that being said, it makes all the sense in the world. I guess in looking at this, it looks like we're not in compliance with our own code.
Exactly.
So I guess I'm looking more long-term. What's the solution? Do you have any recommendations on how we bring this back or what we do to resolve that? And it seems like, a plan to say starting tomorrow, everybody in Monroe has new addresses is probably not the way to do it. Maybe it's some phased approach. But has there been any...
He has one.
Yeah, already got
it. As a matter of fact, I just
and I didn't know that, so I wasn't trying to give you a good segue. I'm actually okay with making voting tonight, and I will vote in favor of that. I'm not sure I would want 3 homeowners to decide or sway our vote on something that we're currently out of compliance with, and we need to fix. And most people, if you ask them, do you want to change your address? I would think most people just say no because people don't like change. So while I respect that, I don't know that it would change my opinion on moving forward the correct way going forward.
So. Thank you. I can comment on that. Absolutely. And to Councilor Kovacs' point, to just change everything would be a tremendous amount of money, staff time. And so for a future discussion, hopefully to be soon. A phased approach where you do one part of town at a time. The first being everything. There's, if you look at 522 cutting across town, but between the green, right in there. Yeah, so making that all green, not the high school, not below where Main Street is. So in the house near the high school, we would leave that out for a different phase. But this is the oldest part of town. And already, it's when you drive along, you've got Elizabeth Street, Maple Street, North Street, and then you get Blueberry Lane, which is on the county numbering system. And it's one block away. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. There's no continuity. At a minimum, kind of that triangle area that you see, kind of in a first phase. The Firelands is the next phase. Then areas north of Highway 2, Roosevelt, Sinclair Heights, and then the farm in Calvin. Some obvious exceptions. You're not going to change addresses on Highway 2. There's some established businesses, North Kelsey. Lots of things to discuss. Way more than tonight. But I have at least initially thought through those kind of things. I know, Brad, God love him, his preference would just be leave it exactly the way that it is. And that's fine, and Jason's too. Looking at the bigger picture, we're growing up. We're growing up, and why not, when you're sitting in the Frylands, know where you are in relation to downtown Monroe. Know where you are. Who cares how far we are from the north end of Lake Rosinger and the Everett Mall? And that doesn't tell you where you are in town. When you're in Monroe, you want to know where you are in relation to Monroe, where you are, not Everett, not some other town. And as we talk about EB5 and Regional Center and events coming, know where you are with relation to town. We want to make downtown the center. We want these opportunities that we have to make the changes in town we've been talking about for a long time. I think that this, in a phased way, budgeted, takes us in a direction that not only makes us unique, but gets us more towards that sense of place, that community. How do we patch these neighborhoods all over that are all in our city together? You do it through a numbering system. Just in the back of your head, you're like, okay, so I know where I am in town. It's a simple way, not easy, simple way to create more unity, a sense of place, unity in town. So kind of my underlying drive there. So Brad's heard this 3 or 4 times, and so and that's all good.
So if I still have the floor,
yeah, you do.
I guess I'm more concerned with either changing our municipal code saying that we have a uniform system of numbering, or we come up with a uniform system of numbering, but that we don't keep that inconsistency. And just having a uniform system of numbering doesn't force us to then go change everybody's address, but at least the plan's there. And I'm not a map guy. I know you're a self-professed map guy. To me, I have no clue where you would even start, but for people that like that and do that, people on the planning commission and so forth probably have views of those. I don't. But I think that we as a council should either change the code to take that language out, or we should get in compliance. And so I don't know what the mechanism to get that started is.
Probably an ordinance, because it's changing the NMC and everything.
If you want to change the Chapter 12, it'd be an ordinance, yes.
So, well, since I'm going to say this later in part of the reports, but we met with three members of council and myself for a time, met with Congresswoman Susan Delveni on Friday. Had a great discussion, and I think I reinforced with her that Monroe is the center of the East Snohomish County universe.
You said the capital.
The capital, that's right. The capital of Snohomish County, and or East Snohomish County. But to Councilmember Geary's point, it just makes a lot of sense to start with downtown and move out throughout the city. I have had people ask in the Fryland area where our downtown is, and I would say, well, go down 159 to Blueberry and make it, if you had a numbering system that all went got smaller, you got closer to downtown.
Like in other small towns.
Yeah, imagine that. How simple that would be. So, however, that is for another time, another discussion. But I think it's on the right track. So, easy but not simple, or simple but not easy. One of the, however you said that. Certainly, it's going to impact some folks and cause some the need for change. And we know how people do not like change. I'm not crazy about it myself sometimes. But the only constant is change, and in this respect, I think it's a good one. So, or would be. So to Councilmember Williams' point, we, I think, rightly so, need to address either the ordinance itself and change the ordinance to bring it into to support what we currently have, or set a direction to bring our numbering system in support of the ordinance as established so far. So,
if I may, maybe when we do future agenda, maybe we can find a date to stick
something. If you like, we can do that. All right. Well, there is a motion on the floor, and seeing no other lights, except for Councilmember Pettit.
I just want to make one final comment. I agree, Dennis Platt, it makes sense coming into the city to have it in the city grid. I'll not be voting for the motion tonight, just because I think, even though it's three people and it might not change our decision, anytime it's not, we have an opportunity to let them know what's happening, to give them an opportunity to voice their opinion. It's a change that affects them. We don't have to decide this till February 5th, is what I heard from Brad. It, for me, I would rather include them, whether it changes our opinion or not. It's just including them that this is a decision that affects you. So that is the only reason I won't vote for it tonight. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. All right. No other lights. Take a vote on the motion then. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And the motion passes 4-2. So Councilmember Pettibet and Gamble. Okay. We do not have a need for executive session this evening. Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it. And so it is 8:49. We're now recessing, going into study session. However, we don't have any I can't see. I need my glasses. Diane, I'm sorry. The adjustment for the water bill. My apologies.
I believe all of you received a copy of the letter from Mr. Gallagher. We, since we're government, we cannot give water away for free. It's considered a gifting of public funds. And so we have to have provisions to make adjustments on people's accounts. For instance, we do have a leak policy. If you have a break in the line, we do have certain provisions for granting a credit for that. Mr. Gallagher swears there was no leak. He does have an irrigation system on that property. He's not there all the time. My personal guess is that somebody either turned on the irrigation system when no one was there and then it was caught and turned off, or someone hooked up to an outside spigot and stole his water, although I can't see why someone would do that. I'm guessing more that maybe the irrigation system was left on. It was for the month of November, that it was a super high read. December and January since then, it's back down to normal read, so there's nothing wrong with the meter. The meter's working totally fine. So I'm not allowed to give credits, but you guys are if you feel there's extenuating circumstances. I just want to caution you that if you open the gate and do it for one person, you may have more. You have to treat everyone fairly. We're bound to since we're government.
That's very good.
Thank you. Diane, I would err on the side of not going in this route for the very reasons you stated, as far as it doesn't look like it was a leak. There's really no explanation. It could be various things. We don't know why his water jumped up. If we do this in this one instance, I do believe it does open the gate for others to treat other. And we have had these requests in the past. And so I'm not in favor of moving in this direction, or moving in the direction of giving them the credit. Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
I agree with Councilmember Kovac. I'm not in support since we didn't identify a leak. There's really no, there's not even a hypothesis from Mr. Gallagher other than I didn't, you know, use it. But the meter's fine, it's in good working order, so that's my opinion. Because it would be opening, you know, my water bill was a lot high last month.
Any other questions or comments?
So, I'm assuming my direction is to go back and tell Mr. Gallagher he will not be getting any credit to his account.
There's consensus there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, my apologies for jumping the gun there. And no executive session this evening. Tonight, we have under our study topic sessions the department reports, which have been outlined in some great detail in the packets this evening. But I will, before Jacob runs out, start with him now that he's standing, and just ask if there's anything additional that you'd like to add to the department reports segment of tonight's agenda.
Well, sure. We started flushing our water mains this month, so some of you may see some disturbances in your lines. Some air, just let it run out with some dirt, but it's a program we do every year. It takes us about 3.5 to 4 months to run from the top of the system all the way down, and it ensures proper fire protection and a safe, high-quality drinking water for you folks. And so, there we go.
All right, so if you notice any of that, now you know what that sense calls from. All right, Ben, anything? Diane, anything further?
Yeah.
Jeff, anything further than that? Anything further?
No.
All right. Brad, anything additional this evening?
Nope.
Brandon, anything additional this evening? Nothing. Council, anything to report this week? Okay. I do want to mention one last thing, and that is that this past week, City Hall experienced a very tragic situation in the passing of one of our staff members. And I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but it was a very tragic situation that, you know, a number of folks are experiencing a great deal of loss as a result. This Thursday, the 23rd, or at 3:30 p.m., a memorial service will be held at the Rock Church, Fort Mark, and just wanted to share that with you, and if you're able, your presence would be
have a city email for him or a way for us to reach out to him?
No, we don't, do we? Let's check on that. That's a good point. And let's see. Before we move on to the city, I think it's important that we check with Mayor Heslick to see how they correspond with their student representative and why, and we'll, you know, look to them for some advice. So
maybe even a generic.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Good point. Anything else? All right, Councilor Gary.
Oh, yeah, I do want to say that student representative Murata looks great in a cow outfit.
I noticed that.
At the girls' basketball game Friday night, we saw the student section, and there he was. I thought maybe he should wear it some on a Tuesday night sometime, but
I'm sorry.
It's student spirit. He looks fantastic.
Honors and everything. He was all in.
I wish I had done things they don't come school things spirit. Like that when I was in high school. Awesome school spirit. Much appreciated. It was a lot of fun to see.
Well, to that, he's missing a game tonight, so thank you for your prioritizing. City Council meeting. So we'll move draft agenda for February 5th. Anything to add at this time, staff? Other than the Mike, who'll be bringing some information back, so for parts under new business final, we'll throw that in there. Right now it seems to be very fairly light, but we'll fill it up for you. Moving on to the extended agenda. Council, anything that you would like to have as part of the extended agenda at this time? Yes, Member Gehring.
Thanks, I won't even hit my leg. Maybe just target first week in March, it's a few weeks out, but some time to at least talk about what changes might need to be made to the ordinance, just to make it, since we don't have a uniform code, we're going to need to make at least some sort of change, so if we could... maybe target that for the 5th initially and move with necessary that.
May I suggest we put that on the study session?
The 12th, that'd be great. 12th. No worries, that's perfect. Yeah.
Okay, so on the 12th, we will add a discussion item, the changing in the street numbering system, either ordinance or the addresses themselves. Any objection to that?
Have a request on that.
All right, Councilor McKenna.
Thank you, Mayor. Has the attorney looked at the ordinance and said it's not in, you know, can we have just an opinion on that for that discussion?
Sure, yeah, a lot of times.
Tons of time, sure. Just to look at it and go, what would, if it's not, you know, proper, or what would make it so, and and just have his opinion on that. That would be helpful.
Okay, so Brad, as part of that discussion, we'll reach out to the attorney well to get his legal opinion on the ordinance as it sits currently today. If that's,
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else to add to our extended schedule? I know this is the silliest thing, but if more than four council members should decide that they're going to attend the memorial service, do we have to make a notification?
All I need to do is send out an address to the people I normally, or send an email to the people I normally send an email to notify that there may be a quorum present.
So as a
huh?
There's no business being discussed there.
Oh, so,
yeah.
Well, Brad says since there's no business, it's just that Attorney Lyle has cautioned that, you know, if any question.
Out of an abundance, we might post something on the website or whatever that council members may be. There may be a quorum at the program on Thursday. So. Alright, sad note to end on, but that is where we will stop this evening. So with that said, the meeting tonight is adjourned.
Thank you. Time to see you.